another round of non-nuclear confrontation between the West and Russia over the territory of Ukraine, admitting the failure of a more than week-old diplomatic initiative to achieve a de-escalation in the crisis on eastern Ukraine. President Obama announced new sanctions against Russian politicians and companies close to President Vladimir Putin. The apparent strategy here is to exploit Russia's ties to the international banking system by making people Putin allegedly depends on politically feel the financial pain of sanctions. But Putin may not need the rich as badly as the West thinks if the Russian leader has the Russian people in his pocket, politically speaking. Thomas Graham served on the National Security Council from 2004 to 2007 as the senior director for Russia. He's now a senior fellow at the Jackson Institute for Global Affairs at Yale University. Thomas Graham, welcome.
Glad to be here.
So sanctions are supposed to sting people around Vladimir Putin. I presume we're talking about oligarchs and people involved in state-owned enterprises who need access to the banking system. Is that a good strategy?
I don't think so. And part of this, I think, is it's a miscalculation of what drives Putin. The assumption here is that money is the most important thing, that if you create some financial pain, particularly around people close to Putin, that he's going to step back and say, "Ooh, wait a minute, this is not what I need to do. I need to come to some sort of deal with the United States, the West, and Kiev on Ukraine." But Putin is really driven by something else. This is a man who for the past 14 years has focused on rebuilding Russia, reasserting its role in world affairs. Ukraine is important because of the national security implications for that. This is a man that's prepared to accept some economic pain to achieve a greater goal for Russia.
Is Russia moving towards isolation in the sense that Putin believes he can rebuild Russia with funds obtained from selling his own fossil fuel resources and that he doesn't necessarily need the international banking system as much as President Obama thinks?
Well, when he looks at the world today, he doesn't see simply the United States and Europe. He sees China. He sees India. He sees Brazil. He sees other options that he can turn to that will, in a sense, alleviate the pain that might be caused by the United States. I think that's something that we need to think about. It's difficult to isolate a country like Russia, the sixth largest economy in the world, that in fact does have other options at this point.
What are those other options? What do they look like, if not isolation?
Russia sends a lot of its gas to Europe. But one of the things that they've been trying to do over the past several years, in which they will focus on the future, is delivering a lot of that gas into Asia, rapidly growing market. China has an insatiable desire for energy. So they've got options in Asia that they can use to turn away from Europe. If you're thinking about investment, a lot of the investment previously would have come from the United States. But there are pockets of money now in Asia that you can use to develop some of these resources. So the point is Putin has other options than the West, which is a big change from, say, where the situation was 15 or 20 years ago.
Short of completely ignoring the sanctions and sort of rhetorically saying, "Give me your best shot, I don't care," what is it that Putin can do that would demonstrate to the world clearly that the sting of the sanctions is not as great as the West would hope?
Well, Europe depends on Russia for about a quarter of its gas. Some countries, 100%. Germany, about a third of its gas. Russia can threaten to cut that off or to delay the delivery in some way. So there are other things that Russia could do as well along those lines to indicate that there is some pain to be paid in the West if the United States and the European Union continues to go down this route.
What is the pain threshold then? What could he do early to maybe shut down the sanctions and end it right here? Flick the switch on Germany?
Well, you could do something like that or threaten something like that. But this isn't going to end quickly. This is a confrontation over the future of Ukraine, very important for Russia. They believe for historical reasons that having a friendly Ukraine is critical to their own security. So they're prepared to pay a high price.
So if military is off the table and sanctions, as you suggest, are strategically misguided and just don't work, it's the West that's out of options.
Well, we're not out of options because you can always negotiate. We have two goals in this current crisis. The first goal is to try to stabilize eastern Ukraine, deter Russia from further military incursions into Ukraine. The second is to defend the rules of European order, which Russia violated by seizing Crimea. So what I've argued for is what I would call a combination of focused resistance plus considered accommodation of Russian interest. So you've seen some of the focused resistance in our effort to reassure our allies in Eastern Europe, Poland and the Baltic states particularly, through military exercises, air patrol, some contingency planning. NATO also needs to begin to rebuild its military capabilities to demonstrate that we're prepared to honor our Article 5 guarantees of collective defense in Europe. Then you have to accommodate Russia's interests. Now, I think what we've lost sight of in the current debate over sanctions and so forth is the problem in Ukraine. Ukraine is broken. The state has collapsed. There's not national unity. The economy is teetering on the brink of ruin. So Ukraine needs to rebuild its state. It needs to forge a national consensus. It needs to repair its economy. The hard truth is we can't do that without Russia. Russia provides the overwhelming bulk of Ukraine's oil and gas. It's an important market for Ukraine. And as we've already talked, it has a lot of personal ties, historical ties, that give it leverage over what happens inside Ukraine. So the challenge for the United States and the European Union is to find a way to bring this to a negotiation, talk about those issues of Russian language rights, decentralization, non-bloc status for Ukraine as a way of accommodating, as we need to, some of Russia's interest in bringing this crisis hopefully to a positive end.
I'm listening intently to what you're saying. It sounds like in that negotiation that you envision, territory will be on the table.
I don't think so. The key for Putin is really the geopolitical orientation of Ukraine. What he's trying to do, in my mind, is to use the rebellion in eastern Ukraine as a way of gaining leverage over the structure of the Ukrainian state, the formation of the government, so that he has, as I said before, a Ukraine that is not hostile to Russia. The idea being that over time, you can gradually bring a more or less unified Ukraine into what he hopes to build, which is a Eurasian Union.
Thomas Graham, Senior Fellow at the Jackson Institute for Global Affairs at Yale University. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.